So in looking at our wholeness of our experience, exploring the body, the heart, and the mind, I want to start by looking at the way we look at it from a traditional Buddhist perspective. Because while there is this distinction in the way the Buddha spoke about things, it's a little more implicit in a way. So there's clearly a recognition of there being bodily processes happening. And then in terms of heart and mind, it's interesting actually in the Buddhist language, the word for heart and the word for mind are the same. There's not a distinction between heart and mind. And in my experience in Buddhist cultures when I went to practice in Asia, and my teacher at one point was asking me to watch my mind, and he said, your mind is located in your chest, just to the left of center. That's where the mind is located. That was not what I thought. I mean, certainly in our culture, you know, the mind seems located here behind our eyes. And so, and I think this is part of why we're looking at this, heart and mind. Because when we use the word mind, we use the word mindfulness, often it evokes, in our culture, it evokes this sense of something up in a control tower here, guiding, directing what everything is doing. And that is not the way that it is really explored in the Buddhist tradition. Very much there's this sense of a kind of a guiding coming from the heart. And in our exploration, I mean, in our kind of Western exploration, we do have a sense, I think, of being guided by our gut and our belly, and being guided by our heart here, and also being guided by our mind. And so we're going to explore those various aspects over these days together. So today I'd like to primarily look at exploring the experience of the body, and to point to, actually, one of the things I'd like to point to is how all these areas of body, heart, and mind get mixed up in the way we look at our experience. And so, as we begin to explore what the body actually is, what the experience of the body actually it is, it helps us begin to tease apart this body processes from these mind and heart processes. So getting familiar with the body, getting familiar with what the body actually is, begins to help us get familiar with what the mind and heart are. At times we're actually not so clear about this. It seems like a kind of obvious distinction on the face of it. And yet as we begin to explore, the more we explore our experience, the more we begin to recognize just how interwoven they are, and actually how confused and conflated they become. And I'll talk about this some as we go through this talk. So in our exploration of wholeness, our exploring of this whole of body, heart, and mind, it's actually helpful to get familiar with the parts. You know, rather than going directly at trying to meet the whole thing at once, it's really helpful to get familiar with the individual parts. And this reminds me in a way of the word that we use for the practice we're doing. The word for the practice we're doing is vipassana, often translated as insight. And this word in the Pali has two parts to it. The pasana part, the second part, pasana, coming from the root pasati, which basically means something like to see, to know, to recognize, to understand, something in, along those lines. I think pasati can be used for the act of seeing, but in this context it's used more for the recognition of understanding, knowing, realizing something. So that's part of the word, this understanding, recognizing, realizing. And the V part, the first syllable of that word, has a couple of different ways it can be understood. And one of the ways it can be understood as, essentially one of my teachers in Burma talked about it as being seeing distinctions. The V part is has a connotation of teasing things apart, clarifying. And so from this standpoint, it's part of this vipassana is to clarify what we're seeing, to get more clear about the distinctions. And in that standpoint, that's part of what we're doing here, is beginning to kind of see if we can distinguish what is body, what is mind. What is body and what is this heart-mind? Another way that this word is, this first syllable of this term, vipassana, is used, is as an emphasis. And so, from that standpoint, this word vipassana could mean something like really seeing, really understanding, truly knowing. And I like this too because it points to kind of the way that we often, as I was saying last night, that there is this truth of what's happening in this moment, and we're not often actually meeting the truth. We're not in alignment with that truth. And so that's what I see as this really seeing meaning, to come into alignment, to know actually what is happening in this moment. And that turns out to be not so easy to do, because our minds have all kinds of processes that are very useful processes that help us to recognize things quickly and meet things that we've met before easily, and kind of all these shortcuts about ways that we go about our lives. Those kind of shortcuts and the ways that we've habituated our minds, having done things many, many times, there's kind of these grooves in our mind. It's like, oh, this is happening. Oh, we'll do it this way. I'm sure you're familiar with this idea. And so those processes in our mind that kind of help us in navigating the world also obscure a lot of what's going on. And in many ways, this is where, we end up navigating our world through ideas and concepts rather than through what's actually happening, particularly in the body. And so we have this, this way that we end up navigating the world based on our ideas about things as opposed to how we're actually experiencing the world. And so this is one of the ways that mind, body and heart, mind can get confused, is through relating to experience rather than through the direct experience of how we're meeting the world through our bodies, we relate to the world through our ideas about what's happening. And we don't even recognize that we're doing that because it's such an automatic shortcut that our minds take. And so part of this practice that we're engaged in is to begin to look more closely, to try to make these distinctions clearly understand. What is body? What is the body actually? What is the experience of body? And then what is the experience of heart and mind? So there's some kind of obvious benefits. There's some benefits of learning to be mindful of the body, learning to be aware of body experience. First thing that's kind of helpful about it is that the body is located in the present moment. And so if you're paying attention to the experience in the body, you're in the present moment. You are meeting what's actually happening if you're meeting bodily experience. As we meet bodily experience also, it supports a way that we can let go, or it helps us to let go when we're actually meeting what's happening in our body. It can help us to let go of how our mind tends to leave the present moment, often through thoughts about the past and thoughts about the future. And so if we're grounded in the actual experience of now through what's happening in the body, it tends to help us from losing ourselves through this movement, very familiar habitual movement, out to thinking about what happened yesterday, a year ago, 10 years ago, 3 seconds ago. Such a strong habit to think about the past and think about the future. It's also a very grounding experience to be in contact with bodily experience. It helps to, again, it's a kind of, because it's in the present moment, it roots us in the present, it roots us in here and now to be connected with the experience of the body. So a very important part of our training, our meditative training, is to learn to get familiar with the actual present moment experience of the body. The body is kind of like a very sensitive instrument, taking in information, and it does this automatically, actually. We don't have to try to do it, thank goodness. You know, there's, if we had to do all the things that our body takes care of, we would be exhausted in a very short time. The body receives information and communicates it to the other parts of our heart and mind very quickly. And that happens so quickly that often we actually miss what the body is telling us, because that communication happens and we're already in our thoughts and ideas and opinions about what's going on in the body without really meeting the bodily experience. And in our culture in particular, I think this culture that we're living in tends to be a very mind-dominated culture. And so we learn to cultivate the capacities of mind, the thinking capacity and the analytical capacities and the processing, problem-solving capacities. And we learn to trust that as the way to solve our problems, to find happiness. We go through our mental processing often as the way we approach living our lives. We live through this layer of mental activity. And so we often miss the base level of information that the body is taking in for us. But when we start to turn towards the body, when we start to pay attention to the bodily experience, we find it's actually a pretty obvious experience to start to recognize. I think this is one of the reasons why the Buddha called out mindfulness of the body as one of the first exercises, one of the first meditative exercises. He said, start here. This is helpful. You know, start with the body. And maybe start with the breathing. So it's a kind of an obvious experience that is a good place to begin our training in staying in the present moment. The heart and the mind, while we live more in that terrain automatically, we live in our thoughts much of the time. We live in our emotional reactivity and responsiveness much of the time. But we're not so mindful of that. So while we live in that terrain, it's actually often a little harder to begin to know what it means to be mindful of thinking and to be mindful of the kind of cloud-like interplay and flowing of emotions. And so actually learning, what does it mean to be here now in the present moment? The body is a great place to begin. Because it's pretty clear to us when we start to look at it. So, the Buddha, in his instructions on mindfulness of the body, offered a number of different exercises, practices for us to explore. And I'm just going to touch primarily on one, but just briefly touch on two more also, hopefully. The first one I'm just going to briefly touch on because we're talking about working with the breath quite a bit in the instructions. I'm just going to briefly say a couple of things about working with the breath as an aspect of the body. Now, first of all, attending to the breath, I think it's a really wonderful way to begin to attune ourselves to that information that's present in our bodies. You know, if you're angry, your breath has one kind of quality to it. If you're peaceful, the breath has another kind of quality to it. When you're at ease, the breath maybe feels easy. When you're anxious, the breath may feel kind of caught. And so just being able to recognize how the breath is begins to give us some information about how our hearts and minds are. So it's a beautiful avenue. It's like the breath reflects all parts of the body and mind. It's like a little mirror that kind of allows us to see the wholeness through that one doorway. We can begin to get attuned to the experience of breathing and at the same time begin to learn something about how our heart is, how our mind is, through how the breathing is. If we can not be judgmental around the breathing. You know, sometimes we start paying attention to the breathing and we get judgmental about it. It's like, well, this breath is supposed to be much more calm and peaceful and I'm having a hard time breathing. Well, rather than having judgment about it, look at it as being information. Oh, the breath feels a little tight. That's interesting. What's going on? You know, is there something else happening here? Is this reflective of something that's going on in the mind? Am I a little anxious? Am I tense? Am I tight? So looking at the experience of breathing as being an avenue for how the body talks to us. Now, Pam was talking about the language of the body not necessarily being English. Now, part of the language of the body is how it's breathing. How it's breathing is talking to us in a way. Another piece I'll just put in about the breath. In the Buddha's instructions about the breath, the very first, not quite the very first, but one of the first things he points us to in the exercise of mindfulness of breathing, he says, breathing in, know that you're breathing in. Breathing out, know that you're breathing out. So right there, actually, the instruction blends body and mind together. We recognize both the breathing and the knowing of it. And sometimes that instruction can be, for me, it can be a helpful easing. Because sometimes in paying attention to the breath, and we'll talk about exploring the breath and feeling the sensations of the breath, sometimes the sensations may be very subtle. The sensations may be the most delicate, quiet kinds of sensations, and sometimes they're hard to actually feel. And yet, if you explore, you probably can know that you're breathing in. Even if you can't identify what the sensations are, you probably can know that you're breathing in. And so this is a way of, for me, it's like, well, when the breath gets a little quiet or it's harder to actually feel the experience of the breath, I move to the knowing. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, I know that I'm breathing in. Not sure how I know that I'm breathing in, but I know that I'm breathing in. And that can be enough, the knowing side of the equation. And so this, you know, this brings in the again, brings in this notion of body and mind together in this instruction. One of the other instructions the Buddha offers in being attentive to the body is probably been one of my most helpful doorways for meditation practice. And the Buddha talks about paying attention to the elemental quality to our bodily experience. Before I go into what the Buddha actually said about it, I'll say a few words about how I understand that to some extent. And this is through what we've been talking about in the instructions, noticing that in our body there's this felt sense of experience, that the body communicates with the mind through a variety of sensations. Sensations like hardness, softness, pressure, tightness, tension, vibration, pulling, pushing, tingling, pulsing, heat, coolness, moisture, lightness. This kind of experience, we could almost call the language of the body. That's the way I framed it to myself, that that's how the body communicates with us, these very basic kind of sensations. The instructions from the Buddha are to recognize these elemental sensations in terms of four basic aspects. The aspect of solidity or earth, the aspect of movement or air, the aspect of temperature or fire, and the aspect of fluidity or water. So the Buddha, the instructions, the Buddha says, a meditator reviews this body, however it is placed, however it is disposed, as consisting of elements. Thus, in this body are the earth element, the water element, the fire element, and the air element. Now, in the time of the Buddha, my understanding is that these elements were understood to be the basic constituents of the universe. The universe was made of those fundamental components. And so it was understood that the body was also composed of those very fundamental components. Nowadays, we have a kind of more refined system of elaborating elements. But still, our bodies are composed of very elemental experience, elemental particles. And, you know, if we think about it, we can reflect on it in our minds, actually, that, you know, our bodies are composed of just the same stuff of the universe. In fact, a large part of the mass of our body was created in the furnace of the stars. And so in a very real sense, we are made of stardust. And just the same stuff as everything else in the universe. And so this kind of reflection can help us to recognize that there's not so much of a distinction between our body and the earth and the air and all the things that are around us. It's all just stuff. In terms of our experience, this is what my understanding and the commentaries in the Buddhist texts talk about, this being a pointer not to like thinking about the body as being composed of earth, but connecting with experiences, connecting with the experience of, well, with earth it would be density and solidity, that kind of thing. And so the kind of sensations that we've been encouraging you to recognize as the body, these sensations were understood at the time of the Buddha as being reflective of these elements. So, starting with earth, and sensations reflective of earth are solidity, heaviness, density, hardness. And then as you sit here, you know, you might be able to sense the weight of yourself. Earth sitting on earth. And this is a lump of earth. That might give you a sense of connecting to that sense of the elemental experience of heaviness, solidity. Or you might be able to touch in or sense the kind of firmness, the solidity, the hardness of the bones in your body. The pressure and the hardness of the sensations of your hip bones pressing down where you're sitting. That might give you a sense of that hardness that's present in the body. And then I'll go through these from, in my experience, which are the most obvious towards the more subtle. For me, the next most obvious element is the air element, which is the element that's reflective of movement. And there's actually quite a bit of movement, even in stillness. There's quite a bit of movement in the body. So sensations like tingling, pulsing, vibration, pressure. As you breathe in, expansion. As you breathe out, contraction. That movement of the body. Any movement that you make, movement of arms, legs, hands, reflective of this element. So you might be able to sense into, some of you might be able to sense into a kind of an energetic field in the body. Just closing your eyes and, you know, maybe put your attention right in your hand first. Often the hand is a good place to start to feel this. But you may, in putting your attention in your hands and closing your eyes so you're not distracted by the sight of your hand, feel a vibration. Tingling. Pulsing. And then maybe have a sense of allowing your attention to expand, perhaps to include a little bit up your arms, and see if perhaps you might be able to notice the vibratory energy in the hands and up your arms a little bit. Some of you might be able to feel this throughout the body. It takes a kind of relaxing of the mind, not looking for it, not trying to find it, but kind of just settling back. You might be able to feel the kind of energetic, vibratory, pulsing field within the body. And then the element of temperature, of heat and coolness, all along that range. This one is usually pretty obvious to people. It's pretty nice temperature out today, so you know the temperature isn't much impinging on the body. But you'll notice this in a range throughout the day. You know, your body getting warmer or cooler. I often find my hands have a slightly different temperature than the rest of my body, so sometimes I can highlight this by putting my hand against my cheek and noticing the difference in temperature there. So the aspect of fire element. And then water element. Fluidity, moisture, stickiness. This one can be a little bit harder to say. I mean, there's some obvious ways that it comes about, like if you've got a lot of saliva in your mouth and you're having to swallow a lot, that's water element. Or if you have an emotion and tears come to your eyes and you feel the water coming down your cheek, that's water element. Or if you are perspiring and you feel the moisture of the perspiration, again, water element. So there's some ways that it's obvious to experience water element. But there's some also kind of subtle ways that we experience water element. One is this aspect of stickiness. You might notice this if you walk with bare feet sometimes, that your feet stick a little bit to the floor. That's because there's a little bit of moisture. You can play with this, actually. Take your hands and blow into them, and then press them together, and then slowly pull them apart, and you'll feel a little bit of stickiness in the hands there. That's water element, that aspect of stickiness. So these basic sensations are kind of how the body communicates to us in very basic ways. what seems to happen for us a lot is that we don't actually meet experience through this avenue. So, you know, when I asked you to put your attention in your hand, for instance, closing your eyes and feeling the hand, and do that again right now. Just, you know, feeling the experience of hand and the pressure. Perhaps you might experience pressure, vibration, tingling, stiffness, sparking, aching, pulsing. Maybe some stiffness or firmness, hardness. And now open your eyes and look at your hand. Think about your hand as a hand and what a hand does for you. You know, it's able to reach for things and touch things. And that's more the usual way that we relate to our experiences, through our ideas about things. And for me, when I do that, when I, you know, look at my hand and think about it as a hand, it often changes my experience. You know, having experienced the kind of very detailed texture of the experience of hand, when I look at my hand and think about it as hand, it's like, wow, where did those sensations go? I can still feel them a little bit, but they're nowhere near as prominent. And so this is a little bit of an example of how we tend to distance ourselves from our actual experience through our ideas and our concepts. So my own way of playing with this practice is not so much to try to figure out, okay, there's vibration happening. Is that water element or is that air? What is it? I don't do that. That brings too much thinking in. For me, it has been more helpful to kind of get familiar with this range of physical sensations. And then I actually will use a kind of a noting practice at times to recognize these physical sensations, but I don't recognize, oh, that's earth, that's air. I recognize more, oh, that's vibration, tingling, pulsing, heat, coolness. So it's not so important to figure out which category they're in. It's more important to get familiar with the language of the felt sense of the body. And whether or not you use a kind of a mental recognition, a noting of it. Minds are different that way. I found that helpful, but I know some people don't find that helpful at all. It seems to take away from the actual direct experience. So use your own judgment about whether that's helpful or not. You could play with it and see if it's helpful for you to recognize what the actual sensations are that you're experiencing. It's most important to learn to connect with these experiences from the inside, rather than having the sense of looking at it. I think Pam said that you know, when she first brings body to mind, it's as if looking at it from the outside through an image of the body. And we're trying to kind of come from the inside. What is the inner experience of the body? How does the body talk to you? How does the body experience itself? So as we begin to recognize that our body is just this massive sensations, it can begin to help us shift our perspective on the body. We typically relate to the body as my body and have all kinds of ideas about our body, whether it's a good body or a a friendly body or an achy body, and we identify with that. We take it personally, essentially. And as we start to explore this more elemental experience, it helps us to recognize, you know, these sensations that we're experiencing, these sensations, you know, they don't have much to do with my ideas. They're just sensations. And it can help us to disidentify somewhat with the body. And this is part of why the Buddha encouraged us to do this, to help us to recognize this body that's sitting here is just sensation. And him pointing to earth, air, fire, and water, pointing to it's just made up of the same things that everybody else's body is made up with. It's the same stuff. It doesn't really belong to you. There's a kind of temporary careship, that caretaking that we have of this particular set of elements. But it doesn't belong to us. You know, at our death, it will go back to the earth and it will nourish the trees and other animals. And actually, even in this temporary caretaking of this body, there's not much that stays the same in my understanding. You know, I understand that most of our cells die off, get sloughed off, get passed out of our systems, excreted through various orifices, and are replaced by new cells. We take in food, we take in new earth, air, fire, and water, we take in new elements, and those elements then get pushed into this form. And, you know, every 7 years we've got a different body. So in a very real sense, this body is not ours. So I'd like to revisit one of the things I said early on about how body and heart-mind can get conflated and confused. As we start to pay attention to this very elemental, basic language of the body, we start to see the mindfulness of that experience helps to highlight the distinction between body and heart-mind. So some of our experience in the body is pleasant. Some of our experience in the body is unpleasant. You know, the sensations of, you know, hardness, for instance. Hardness could start. There might be some sensations of hardness that could be pleasant. But, you know, you start out sitting on the cushion and that experience of hardness, maybe it feels kind of neutral. But you sit there for 40 minutes, and by the end of that 40 minutes, that experience of hardness is unpleasant. So the mind shifts in its relationship, the heart and mind shift in its relationship to these elements. And as we start to recognize, okay, there's hardness. And what's my relationship to hardness? Often that relationship is mediated through whether we experience it as pleasant or unpleasant. And so when things are experienced as unpleasant, we tend to react. We tend to have, the mind tends to have aversive responses. We don't like it. We want to get rid of it. We may have a sense of anger for it or fear around it. All of those being kind of in the terrain of aversion around things that are unpleasant. So there's the bodily experience. And then there's this recognition of its quality of being unpleasant, and the mind responds, reacts to that. The more we can get familiar with the kind of bare language of the body, the more we see the distinction between the experience of hardness and how the mind reacts to that. And it does this too with pleasant sensation. You know, when things are pleasant, we like them, we want more of them, we want to keep them. A whole range of emotions, excitement, a wanting, of pride, of a stinginess can be born out of feeling pleasant sensation. So one of the keys to begin to recognize is that the physical experience and our response to it are two different things. And getting really familiar with this language of the body begins to highlight that for us. And as that is highlighted, as it's highlighted that there's this bodily process and the mind and heart responding to that, we start to watch and see that there are all these feedback loops between the body and the heart and the mind. So for instance, around pain is a good place to get familiar with this, to notice this. So, you know, what we call the experience of pain is an unpleasant experience, an unpleasant sensation that may be like something like burning, stabbing, aching, pulling, twisting, tightness. So there's a kind of an elemental experience of that. And so an unpleasant experience and our reaction to that. Those two things come together, the unpleasant elemental experience and our reaction to it, create what we call pain. So again, we through our exploration of attending to the experience, we can begin to tease apart the elemental experience and the unpleasant aspect of the experience from our reaction to it. And what we see is that, so in our minds, in our hearts and minds, there's the reactivity of, in our heart center, we could look at the reactivity around kind of a, you know, get rid of that, kind of a sense of pushing away, or a feeling of agitation in the body around it. You know, that we could think about being the heart reaction. And in the mind, there's often a lot of stories and thoughts about, shouldn't be like this, I need to get rid of this, I need to fix this, it would be better if I changed my posture, I should do less sitting in the cross-legged posture and more on the chair. And the mind will kind of pick up on the whole phenomenon and start telling stories about it. Or it may start telling stories about what we think that pain is. You know, it's like, oh, there's that pain in my knee, and I bet I'm tearing the tendon in my knee, and oh no, I'm going to have surgery, and oh, I'm not going to be able to ever run again, and what am I going to do if I can't run again? I'm going to not be able to be healthy, and I'm going to have high, the mind will just take off. So this kind of feedback loop between our kind of emotional response and the stories and thoughts around it, those tend to feed back and exacerbate the physical experience. And you can actually watch this happen. It's an interesting exploration to look at what's the actual experience, and then noticing all of this stuff that's going on around it, and then, okay, noticing the physical experience. And you may notice at times that this stuff that's going on in the heart and mind, over time, you might begin to see fluctuations in that. Sometimes there's more sense of, gotta get rid of this, gotta fix this, gotta change this, can't have this happening, the oh no factor going on in the mind around this experience. And sometimes it might just be more like, oh, I just don't like this. You know, so the reactivity diminishes a little bit. And you may see that the quality of the unpleasantness changes as the mind's reactivity changes. And so we start to see just how intertwined the body and the mind are. It's quite amazing how closely connected they are. So the Buddha talked about this as as if the first experience of pain that we have, like if he says, like somebody being shot with a dart. And that initial, you know, being shot with a dart is going to create pain. You know, there's, you know, we cut ourselves with a knife, there's going to be pain in the body. We fall down and bruise our knee, there's going to be pain in the body. You know, there's things that our body reacts to, and pain happens, unpleasant experience happens. And then the Buddha says, well, but we don't stop there. He says, it's you know, we go on to beat our breast and bemoan, why me, and lament and be sad and grieving and distraught about that unpleasant experience. And he says, you've taken one unpleasant experience and added another one to it. He said, it's as if, having been shot by a dart, you pick up a dart and shoot yourself with a second one, having that reactivity. And so you compound the experience of pain by having that second layer of reactivity. And so we can, in a very real way, get familiar with this dynamic. And part of the exploration has to do with coming into that, you know, what is the actual experience in the body? And that beginning to highlight how the mind doesn't like certain experiences, doesn't like certain ways the body is talking to us, and does like other ways the body is talking to us. So in exploring this, I found it helpful to kind of open and acknowledge both the unpleasant experience and the hearts and minds response to it, to acknowledge the whole picture, rather than like saying, oh, okay, well, there's reactivity. What I should do is to you know, be more with that elemental experience. If there's reactivity in the mind, if you're trying to push yourself to be with that elemental experience, it's likely to just exacerbate the reactivity. So I found for myself, I was actually sitting this morning with pain in my back, and noticing that not liking was happening. I was like, okay, there's that pain and there's the not liking. Kind of like what it was suggesting around the breath. It's like, yeah, there's sound and there's the breath. You know, just like opening to take in what's actually happening here. And I found for myself, when I can take that in, it's like we cannot necessarily control our mind's responses and reactions to experience, but we can be aware of it. We can be mindful of it. And so being aware, oh, there's pain in the back and the not liking of it. What that did, I mean, initially I saw actually, you know, I kind of became cognizant of the pain as kind of being there was a subtle repression around it. It's like, no, don't feel that pain, ignore that pain, you know, don't pay any attention to that pain. And yet the pain was strong enough that, you know, it was there. And so when I opened to, oh, there's that, you know, burning, twisting, aching in my back, in the back, and the unpleasantness of that, and the not liking, it's like the whole thing got much easier. That's a little counterintuitive to take in, but play with it yourself and see if you notice the pain and notice how the mind is reacting to it. Is that, it kind of, for me, it like creates some space around the whole thing. Makes it much easier to rest in that space. And when the mind acknowledged, yeah, there's unpleasantness and the not liking of it, it's like, oh yeah, that's what's happening. Okay, I can be with that. I mean, it's not like it was like this massively unpleasant, searing sensation. It was a little bit of pain. The not liking compounded it. And you'll see this actually happening a lot. And that's another exploration to make is, okay, so there's this pain. Actually, how unpleasant is the pain? And how much of it is the mind saying, this is going to get worse, I'd better move. So noticing, you know, noticing what the distinction is. Now, I do want to say that in working with unpleasant sensations and working with difficult bodily experience, you know, The idea is not to force yourself to sit still. Would like to encourage you to explore a little bit in this vein that I'm talking about. But as we begin this exploration, as we first start to play with it, often the reactivity, the habit of reacting to unpleasant is so powerful that we have very little control over it. And so we can play with it for a little while, perhaps, and then find kind of the mind gets exhausted trying to do that, or gets overwhelmed trying to do that, trying to play with this exploration of knowing the physical and the reactivity together. And so if it feels overwhelming, or if it feels like it's just kind of too much, had enough of trying to be mindful of it, by all means, you know, often in sitting meditation, our posture itself will generate unpleasant sensations that are painful. And so if it is helpful, move. You know, work with it. You know, actually, sometimes it's helpful in beginning exploration of this kind of thing, of playing with exploring difficult physical sensations, to let yourself know at the very beginning, okay, I can move if it gets too hard. You know, so just let yourself know that right up front, and then you know, see what you can learn about your mind and your body's interaction, how they interact. And when it gets too much, then go ahead and move. You know, you're welcome to shift the posture. Do that mindfully. Move mindfully. It's actually helpful if you're going to shift your posture to shift kind of slowly. To just explore, you know, what does it mean? You know, I sometimes, when I need to shift my posture, sit there and it's like, okay, well, I'll let my body move, but I'm going to watch it move. So let's see, what's the first thing that moves as I have to shift my posture? And I'm sometimes surprised with the first thing that moves. It's like if it's my right knee that's in pain, it's like, okay, what's the first thing that moves? So the first thing I seem to do is I shift my posture this way. And then I move my left hand to catch my weight. And then perhaps I can move my leg and my knee like that. And so exploring that whole process of movement mindfully. There are some kinds of unpleasant, difficult physical sensations that are unrelated to the posture. I mean, there are, you know, some of us have chronic conditions that generate pain in the body. And again, you know, you can play with this exploration around the feedback loop between the body and the mind there, because it is the mind's reactivity around it is actually, you don't have to believe this, but you know, you could explore a little bit and see. The mind's reactivity is the main thing that's happening that creates what we call pain. The actual physical sensations that we have, when the mind is not reactive to them, when the mind is simply, oh, there's an unpleasant sensation happening, when the mind is not reactive, what we are experiencing as unpleasant sensation doesn't have the same quality as what we call pain. So the vast majority of what we call pain is a function of our mind's reactivity. So that exploration, you know, we can begin to make that exploration even around chronic pain, looking at, you know, how the mind is reacting to it and seeing the reactivity come and go. We may begin to get a taste of that, how the mind's reactivity is the largest part of what we call pain. But again, you know, it's not something we have a lot of control over, that mental reactivity. It's a slow process of learning and exploring and understanding. And so if there is overwhelm, you know, if it's a chronic kind of pain and it's not going to go away from moving or shifting your posture, then one thing you could play with is shifting your attention. Sometimes pain kind of draws us to it. And if we are getting overwhelmed or exhausted, fatigued by the mind being drawn to that, then it can be helpful to see if you can find a way to open the attention to other things. You might open your eyes and let there be seeing. You know, if you're at a place where you can look out the window, look out the window and take in the trees. Or you could see if you could pay attention to hearing instead of the bodily sensations. Just some way to see if you could redirect the attention from that experience of pain, if it's a kind of pain that isn't going to go away from shifting your posture. So, I need to stop now. It's time to stop. I'll just finish with just a kind of a encouragement that part of this exploration around getting familiar with the body and seeing how the mind responds begins to give us another kind of information about how a lot of what goes on in our minds and bodies is cause and effect. Things happen in the body, and there's a result that happens in our mind. You know, things happen, you know, we have a physical sensation in our body, and we get anxious. So there's a cause and effect relationship. Things happen in our minds and hearts. We experience an emotion, the arising of fear, for instance, and it impacts our body. So we really start to see this cause and effect. And we see that this isn't something that's personal. But it is just a process that's happening. And it's quite remarkable how little control we have over that process. And so what we're trying to do here is kind of settle back and watch the process and learn to be balanced. Learn how to balance our minds around this unfolding show of body and heart and mind. So I know that some of you have to go to the kitchen right now. And for the rest of you, what I'd encourage is to just take 5 minutes or so to just sit here and let go of the words. Let the words of the talk kind of float away and just seeing if you can be present with the body. And then when you're ready to get up and do some walking practice. But I would encourage you to stay still for just a few minutes here. So thank you for your attention.